thought it would be like me and a couple of crusty, smelly fishermen.
If I could call the meeting to order, I'd like to welcome you all here to the second meeting of the California Ocean Protection Council. My name is Mike Chrisman, Secretary for Resources of the California, and the chair of the council. I'd like to welcome you all here today. And again, I think most of you know that this council was formed pursuant to the California Oceans Protection Act signed into law by Governor Schwarzenegger last year. The membership of the council was specified, of course, under legislation. It includes the Secretary for Resources serving as chair. The chair of the State Lands Commission also sits on the council. Secretary for CalEPA, and we have ex officio representation both from the California State Senate and the California Assembly. If I might, before I make the introductions, let me undertake a few little housekeeping chores for today. I want to ask you, if you would, to turn off your cell phones and other PDA devices, or put them on vibrate, if you would, please. Also, like to, one of the more important announcements of the of any meeting such as this is the location of the restrooms. And the location of the restrooms out in the main entry hall there, and kind of back down to the right. I think you'll be able to see them. And also, a very special thanks to the Port of San Francisco for allowing us to use this beautiful room, beautiful facility for our meeting of the Ocean Protection Council. Let me, if I might, begin by introducing the members of the council. Soon to arrive will be the Lieutenant Governor of the State of California, Cruz Bustamante, who is currently serving as Chair of the State Lands. He'll be here soon. On my right, just beyond Brian Baird, who I think you all know, is Alan Lloyd, the Secretary of CalEPA. Next to Alan is Julie McKeever, who is on Senator Sheila Kuehl's staff. Senator Kuehl is the representative from the Senate on the Ocean Protection Council. And on my left is Assemblymember Pedro Nava from Santa Barbara area, who is the Assembly representative, is ex officio member on the council, just appointed him. Pedro, nice to have you with us. Thank you for being with us today. I'd like to talk, if I might, by way of a few announcements and teeing up the conversations that we're going to have in the meeting today. Some of our activities of late in the whole area of oceans. Let me first talk about. There it is, right there. Let me first talk about why the council, why and how the council was created. Our council, again, was created in statute last year. Was created to coordinate state agency activities to improve the protection and conservation of coastal and ocean resources. Additionally, it was created to improve the collection and sharing of scientific data. Also, to work to identify and recommend changes in state or federal law and policy necessary to achieve the protection, conservation, and enhancement of ocean ecosystems. Really, in summary, if you think about it, we're here to look at the big picture of oceans, marine resource management here in California, and to find ways to improve the way we protect and manage these most valuable resources here in California. Today's agenda, I think if you've all taken a close look at it, we have a full agenda that addresses the issues and actions from the international, national, state, and local level. We are definitely making significant progress, and also made some impacts at the national level. A few of the highlights, if I might. At the federal level, we're having discussions, and we'll have a discussion of federal issues, which will address the national energy policy, the National Coastal Zone Management Act, the law of the sea at the international level, on funding. Today, we'll also be talking about providing some great news regarding the funding of the council, and consider procedures for moving forward with some of our new projects. You also note in the agenda we're going to be considering for some action items today, some pilot projects, four pilot projects that will lead to on-the-ground benefits for ocean and coastal environment here in California. On the Governor's Ocean Action Plan, we'll also hear a status report on the substantial progress being made regarding the action on the Governor's Ocean Action Plan. Just of note, today and today's San Francisco Chronicle, there were three articles dealing with oceans, coastal issues. There were also articles, in those articles, they talked about Senator Boxer's new ocean bill putting forward, that she's putting forward. Army Corps, the sand replenishment on San Francisco beaches, the Army Corps of Engineers, and the test run of the remote oceans operations vehicle. Are all issues, of course, that we're going to be talking. We're going to be talking about today. I'd also like to make a few brief announcements, and then we can move into some of the comments from our other members.
A little bit farther back.
Sorry.
Got to make this work. Sorry about that.
The Ocean and Economic Summit. We're going to be Ocean and Coastal Economic Summit. We're going to be holding July 22nd. Soon, the National Ocean Economic Project will release a study of the value of the ocean's economy here in California. On the 22nd, the California Biodiversity Council will sponsor this summit that will discuss the report findings. And we'll hear from leading economists and to discuss new market-based approaches to ocean and coastal management here in California. The Biodiversity Council, of course, will also consider a recommendation to this council on necessary future actions and activities. In September of 2006, California and the World Ocean Conference, the staff were making some preliminary plans to call an international conference here in California, and the World Oceans, in compliance with the Governor's Ocean Action Plan call. This in the past we've held them in California before. This has been one of our most successful conferences in the nation. We hope to focus the next one on the actions of this council and the work that we be doing here in California. Other very important activity is the inventory of California ocean and coastal laws. Again, this is required in the Governor's Ocean Action Plan. The staff has convened a work group of legal experts from state agencies to help complete this most important inventory and to begin evaluating how these laws are indeed being enforced. The staff is also working with experts on international law to determine if California should be more engaged, to what extent we should be more engaged in the whole discussion on international issues. This is a kind of a synopsis of kind of going back to the Governor's Ocean Action Plan, talking a little bit about what we've been about as we've gone through the startup of the California Ocean Protection Council. I'd like now to provide an opportunity for our announcements from council members or any other announcements that they'd like to be making at this point in time. Secretary Lloyd, any comments or questions at this point?
Oh, just briefly that as Secretary McPeak and I have been working on the ports and goods movement activities, clearly there is a relationship with our work here, particularly when we look at some of the dredging activities. So we're very cognizant of that, and I appreciate the input from maybe some of the members out there today. That's a segment that was probably underemphasized in the phase one report that we're putting together, but we'll have greater focus on the next phase. But besides that, no.
All right. Thank you. Assemblymember Nava, any comments before we begin the meeting today?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What an incredible venue, first of all, for those of us to enjoy who have this incredible charge with our responsibilities with the Ocean Protection Council. And as many of you know, my first experience in this world was a result of some people call it a sentence, I call it an appointment to the California Coastal Commission. By then Speaker of the Assembly, now Lieutenant Governor Cruz Bustamante. And I've had 8 years of experience on the coastline, getting a sense of the kinds of challenges that the Coastal Commission faces, and realized very quickly how important it was to work collaboratively and cooperatively with the various agencies that share some responsibility for California's coastline. And it's a real privilege and an honor to now represent the Assembly on this particular panel. I'm pleased to see on this agenda that we've got an area of public comment for non-agenda items. It's been my experience that some of the best ideas come from the wisdom of people who aren't so-called experts, but many folks who work day in and day out on coastal issues. And if there is one particular area that I'd like to address, I don't know how many people here are paying $50 for parking. I got it for $27.50 at the Embarcadero, but if we want to have more public participation from grassroots organizations, then we're going to have to do a different job in terms of arranging and facilitating access for members of the public who can't afford $27.50 to park to attend a meeting. But other than that, I'm pleased to be here.
Hear, hear. Thank you very much. Julia, anything you'd like to... All right, thank you. Yeah, that's right. That's right. None of us like to pay $27.50 for parking. Lord. All right. Thank you. Appreciate that. Next, by way of order of business, in the briefing book under tab two is the are the minutes of the March 22nd meeting. If they're hopefully you had an opportunity to take a look at them. Any suggestions for additions or corrections to those minutes? If not, we'll entertain a motion to either adopt or amend. Good morning.
Secretary Christman?
Yes, sir. Yes, Julia, sorry.
It's okay. Call me, sir.
I will. All right.
I noticed in the minutes there was a suggestion by Secretary Lloyd that a committee be formed to look at streamlining funding for the council.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to suggest that Senator Kuehl would be very happy to head that up.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Before we take the vote, Lieutenant Governor has joined us. Lieutenant Governor, nice to have you with us this morning. Glad you could be with us.
Pleasure.
We're in the we are in the midst of the conversation about the minutes of March 22nd meeting. If there are no other corrections or additions to the minutes, I'll entertain a motion from the council to adopt those minutes. Then, is there a move?
Yes.
Second. Okay. Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. We just had an opportunity for the members to go around and make a few comments. Please, if you'd like to make any comments before we begin the meeting, now would be the time to do it. Now that you're here, love to have you.
Looking forward to moving on a lot of very good projects.
Great. All right. Thank you. Again, thank you for being here. Under federal affairs, there's also in our binder a series of letters and resolutions under tab 3, located in the council members' briefing books. Specifically talking about national energy policy development, offshore oil and gas, LNG, and Coastal Zone Management Act. Of course, as I think most of you know, that there are a tremendous amount of activities at this point in time at the national level. At our March meeting, we agreed to send a letter to various members of Congress and quite frankly dealing with these three issues that I just talked about, offshore oil and gas, coastal zone management, and liquefied natural gas siting. To remind folks what we said in that letter, we indicated that this council opposes any effort to lift the congressional moratorium on offshore oil and gas leasing activities that have been protecting our shores here since 1982. We also went on record to strongly oppose any effort to reduce the ocean and coastal protections provided by the Coastal Zone Management Act. And also the council strongly objected to any of the efforts to reduce or eliminate the state's role in siting of the liquefied natural gas facilities on state waters. Again, this was all a part of the conversations going on at the time about the national energy policy, energy bill moving through Congress, and so we've weighed in. The council letter, of course, was sent to has been used by members of the House and Senate in their deliberations on the energy bill, and in consideration of legislation to reauthorize the Coastal Zone Management Act. governor's position on these issues. Again, sent a number of letters. The governor's Washington, D.C. office, of course, has been very actively conveying these messages to the members of Congress. He also sent a letter to the Secretary of Interior in support of the California Coastal Commission's request for more time and to gather more information to review these 36 offshore oil and oil and gas lease tracts off the coast of California. State Lands Commission and legislature, of course, have taken very strong positions by the regarding the these oil and gas issues, particularly on the issue of maintaining the national moratorium on oil and gas development. The Coastal Zone Management Act reauthorization, written to the U.S. Senate on behalf of the governor in support of Senate S-360 to reauthorize the CZMA, and these also a number of other letters in our in the briefing binder, a letter to the Senate from the governors, a number of governors regarding the need to maintain certain to maintain state jurisdiction over the siting of LNG facilities. A letter to the United States Senate from Governor Schwarzenegger regarding the national energy policy and supporting the issues in the council letter. Also, a very important resolution from the California State Lands Commission supporting the oil and gas moratorium and other energy recommendations. Also in the binder is a Assembly Joint Resolution number 14 supporting the oil and gas moratorium and state rules. And, of course, then a letter I wrote to the United States Senate regarding the Coastal Zone Management Act. So, again, as you can tell, a lot is going on at the federal level. We've been actively involved. Members of the council individually and collectively have been actively involved in these activities. Specifically, as it relates to the Law of the Sea Treaty at the federal level, at our first meeting, remember Admiral Jim Watkins, who is the chair of the United States Commission on Ocean Policy, and former congressman, former White House Chief of Staff Leon Panetta, and who was the chair of the Pew Oceans Commission report, urged California to join them in calling for the ratification of the Law of the Sea Treaty currently in the Senate. Governor has already expressed his support in these comments to the U.S. Commission and has now written the U.S. Senate supporting the effort to move the Law of the Sea Treaty forward. That letter is also in our briefing books. We think this will allow the United States to be fully engaged in the management of commerce in matters of at the international level, which could benefit California both in trade and on environmental issues. In the area of working with our federal government, trying to assist this, trying to achieve some little more assistance from the federal government, we've been working with NOAA. I recently had an opportunity to meet with Admiral Lautenbacher, the head of NOAA, to discuss potential for enhanced partnerships between NOAA and the state of California. Admiral Lautenbacher has responded to that, and again, that letter is handed out this morning to us, indicating a support for the activities that we're suggesting, particularly in the ocean observation system. He also invited us to address the new federal committee on ocean policy on these issues, which we most certainly will take them up on. I also believe that we should respond to the Admiral and seek to address the new federal committee. In making our views known, and of course, we will do just that. With the Environmental Protection Agency, just this last week, I had a phone conversation with Wayne Nastry, who is the Region 9 administrator, and he called saying that they wanted to engage with us on a whole series of new additional partnerships in the area dealing with oceans. In the audience today is Mr. Paul Michelle from Region 9 here to make a series of announcements. Paul, if you could come forward and do them at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, council members. It's a pleasure to be in front of you today to make some announcements. Again, my name is Paul Michelle. I'm with EPA Region 9 here in San Francisco. And I'd like to take this opportunity to report on this meeting that we had just this week in Washington, D.C. I was with Wayne Nastry, my regional administrator, regarding the U.S. Ocean Action Plan, and I think would have interest to this council. On Tuesday, the White House hosted a meeting of the national and regional principals of the five core agencies of the Coastal America Partnership. EPA, Army Corps of Engineers, NOAA, Department of Interior, and USDA, to discuss the mobilization and, if you will, reinvigoration of the Coastal America Partnership to address key elements of the U.S. Ocean Action Plan, specifically coastal and coastal wetlands restoration. A very important and critical aspect of this, recognized by the National Regional Principles, was state involvement and participation, and specifically at the regional team levels of Coastal America. So I just wanted to make the announcement that I, as the co-chair of the Southwest team, which is California, my co-chair, Pat Rutten, with NOAA Fisheries, is going to be working over the next several months to engage the relevant state agencies to form a better state and federal partnership to see where these synergies lie between the U.S. Ocean Action Plan and the state's Ocean Action Agenda. So where there are common purposes, we can form some partnerships to implement those parts of those plans. So I'm very excited about that and would ask for your support in that. The other announcement I have is funding, which is everybody's favorite topic. I have just this week the announcement that EPA has approved the Resources Agency's application for a wetlands grant. And normally this isn't a big deal, but this one is, and because of the it's a demonstration pilot program over a three-year period. While I can't announce the exact dollar amount, it's in the several hundred thousand dollars per year range for the next 3 years. And this will this money will go towards tracking status and trends of wetlands in the state, also provide funds for implementing a host of non-regulatory approaches to conserve and better manage the state's wetland resources. So we're very excited about that. We'll be working with your staff, Secretary Crisman, over the next several months to finalize that work plan and make the award as soon as possible. So I think this work especially will benefit the Southern California Wetlands Recovery Project, which is the five coastal counties of Southern California, as well as the Bay Area Wetlands Recovery Effort. So very excited about this, and we look forward to working with all of the state agencies on this work plan.
Paul, we really look forward to this partnership. Again, it's my own personal viewpoint on this, with given the nature of the Key Ocean Commission report and the announcements and the suggested actions that have come out of that, and then, of course, the U.S. Commission on Ocean Policy report that we talked about, that Admiral Watkins and others have talked to us about. Now that they're out, we've issued our Ocean Action Report. We think that timing is critical. We need to be pushing as hard as we can to try to get engaged with our federal partners. And we're really glad to see that this is happening. And we'll be looking forward to working with you folks. And appreciate the grant and the work that you're doing with us.
Any other comments or questions?
Yes.
Paul, can you tell me, are you going to be taking any kind of position on the federal energy bill?
No, I'm not going to comment on that today.
Is it possible to do that? I mean, if you want to partner with the state of California, one of the best ways of being able to partner with us is for the federal government to back off this energy bill the way it's currently constructed. A letter or a position letting the Congress, letting the President know of the detrimental impacts that it could have. Even if it was an inside memo or some kind of a briefing paper, something that would let them clearly understand the strong concerns here about the provisions of that bill, would be helpful.
I understand. As a representative of the U.S. EPA, I couldn't speak on behalf of the whole federal government, but what I can do is report back to this council next time and see where we are with that issue.
I think the Lieutenant Governor brings up a good point. If you would carry to us, and we have made very clear our position on particular provisions of the energy bill as it affects California, if you could make sure that the word has gotten to the proper folks in DCP, that would be very helpful.
I'd be glad to follow
up. Is it possible that the head of EPA could provide a briefing? Once properly briefed by you, I'm assuming, either to members of Congress or to the leadership or to the President, I think that also would help.
Okay. Take that back then.
I will.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks. Any other questions or comments?
Just following up on that, Mike, it may be that I think that the administrator is going to be speaking at the WGA conference. You might see him on Monday when you're there. It's an opportunity to relay those feelings.
Okay.
Two other points. One, is there any funding? The first part you talked about was reinvigorating the fire group. Any money associated with that activity?
Not specifically, although there is an initiative underway to do a cross-budget cross-cut with the federal agencies to bring some dollars to the Coastal America Partnership, but it is more of a leveraging mechanism. So to bring the technical policy and funding assistance with two local project sponsors through this partnership. So no specific dollar amounts at this time, but things like our wetlands grant to the state, you know, these are the types of things that we will do to try to assist.
I would like to follow up on Mike's comment there. I think it's great to have those dollars, although I'm a bit surprised that they're not millions rather than hundreds of thousands, because the magnitude of the issue, we really need to have more federal dollars rather than basically small amounts. So the other piece, I think, when we talk about 3 years, I share Mike's concern. We don't want to build a bureaucracy. We want to get things done. So, you know, we need to have that sense of urgency, get things done. So how long will it take? When will those dollars get to California?
Oh, I would say in the next several months we'll make the award.
So how long did it take then to get the money flowing to doing some useful work?
Right away. Once the award is made, then funds can be.
I think that ties in with my earlier comment. And
okay.
Great. Is it possible that this council could have an impact on providing some sense of priorities of some of those projects?
Well, the projects are more of planning tools. They're mapping and inventorying wetland resources, tracking wetland projects, a whole host of non-regulatory tools to conserve and better manage wetlands. So,
I know, but you're going to be allocating dollars to that.
Yes, we will.
Right. And so if there was a lot of projects that you're looking to fund, it could be that the council may have an idea as to what priority items. I mean, it wouldn't hurt to listen that some of the agencies who deal with this every single day might have a little bit different perspective than you might have, and if you enter into dialogue, that would be a form of partner building.
Yes, the work plan was put together by resource agency staff, and it was approved by EPA. Now we're going to a phase where we'll negotiate that work plan, so we'll be open to the suggestions from the resources agency on how to finalize that work plan. So look forward to that.
I think he brings up an excellent point. If we could just get a regular report over time how it's going, anything that we need to do to help in the process, we'd be glad to do that.
Anything else?
I just wanted to make a note about the Assembly Joint Resolution 14, which enjoyed very substantial support on the Assembly side, including Mr. Navas. It's in the Senate Natural Resources and Water Committee, for which I'm principal consultant for Senator Kuehl, and she's chair of that committee. We're going to hear it on Tuesday, and after that, Senator Kuehl will be working hard with the Senate to try to get more Senate co-authors on that joint resolution as well to demonstrate the Senate support, and we hope to get it up to the President as soon as possible out of the legislature.
Great. And Mr. Chair.
Yes.
As the Assembly representative that includes Santa Barbara, the home of the 1969 oil spill, that is an event that I guarantee you is never going to fade in the public consciousness of people in that area. And when we take into consideration that the resource that's out in the channel that is likely to be explored through these leases as by Mineral Management's own estimation asphalt grade crude, folks don't think it's worth the risk. We have an incredible, very healthy and vibrant tourism industry throughout all of California, particularly coastal California, and as it affects Santa Barbara, Ventura, and the Central Coast, I guarantee you that there will be very strong opposition to any effort to deviate from no drilling off the coast. Okay. Are your comments or suggestions?
Well, I have a comment, but not on this particular area.
Okay, Paul, thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Please. And I'm going to ask, are there any other comments that any of the council members have on any of the report we've just gone through?
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
Sure.
And I wanted to bring this up at this point because we're talking about federal-state issues. And I note that on June 8th, there was a story in the Ventura County Star, which is in my district again, talking about the impacts of potential aquaculture. And one of the sites that is likely to be considered is Platform Grace. Now, having been on the Coastal Commission for 8 years, I come to this group with some experience as to the difficulties and the challenges and the problems, and there are some opportunities, but clearly environmental impacts associated with aquaculture. The use of antibiotics, the use of other chemicals in order to enhance the growth of the fish, the escape of certain kinds of fish out into the ecosystem that then further creates strain on the ocean ecosystem. And I do think that since we're talking about federal-state partnership, and since part of the charge of this entity is to take a look at big picture issues and items, aquaculture should be one that is on our agenda.
Thank you. Other comments or suggestions?
This is the right time for this. I wanted to ask if the council would consider having not only a regular federal item on the agenda, but also an item that covers state activities, both legislative and policy.
Okay.
For example, it's been requested that, for example, the Marine Life Protection Act be on an update on that, be on every agenda under the sort of state heading.
Okay.
And I think relative to the same policy discussions that we're having now, there are a number of bills in the legislature, for example, Senator Smitty and Viscutia are carrying bills on liquefied natural gas, that those would also be helpful to inform our discussions.
Great. We have definitely do that. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, could I...
Sure.
Juliet gave me the
opening.
You're going to get what you asked for, Juliet.
Right.
Although Sam's never been known.
Job, Sam.
Sam's never been known to be terribly shy.
Not that I should know. Good morning, Sam Shookit, Secretary of the Council. Great to see you all. I wanted to draw your attention to a few pieces of legislation in our legislature and one in Congress. We are going to have a speaker from Senator Boxer's office. As you read in the newspaper, she has released what a lot of my NGO colleagues call Bob, the Big Ocean Bill. It's 286 pages long. I have a summary for you. I can't claim to have actually read it yet myself. It does seem to cover everything. Julia alluded to a couple of two pieces of legislation. SB 1003, introduced by Senator Escutia, and SB 426, introduced by Senator Simonian. They are actually companion legislation dealing with liquefied natural gas terminals in the state of California. We have copies of the current version of those for you. You know that that's right up there with desalination and once through cooling as issues of interest on coastal communities. I also wanted to draw your attention to, and I have a copy of Senator Simonian's bill on aquaculture. As you know, the NOAA has released a proposal for large aquaculture facilities within the federal government's exclusive economic zone. This, I don't think, would affect that, but it does affect aquaculture within California waters. So we'd be happy to make this kind of thing a regular part of the agenda for you.
Great. Okay.
At MLPA, we will make sure to include an update on each of the agendas on the Marine Life Protection Act. Yes, Alan?
Talking about energy issues, just wanted to say that the governor announced in the greenhouse gas reduction targets last week. I think it's important that this does impinge on what we're trying to do here and vice versa. So the choices for energy and other things that we look at will affect our charter here, and I would like to suggest that we will maybe the next meeting in September provide an update, get my staff to provide an update since we're working with your agency, Mike, and other cabinet level to see in fact how we may be working together and taking explicit concern for some of the ocean issues and the shore issues here.
Great. Okay. Will do. Your comments or questions for anybody? All right. Thank you. Next on the agenda is our public comment period. In a very important part of our meeting, I will note, please, that what we're going to ask for is public comment on non-agenda items. As we move forward after this item on the agenda to funding discussion, the various pilot projects and others, we will, after each item, we'll ask for public comment specifically on those agenda items. So Those of you here today have provided some speaker cards on these non-agenda items, and we would appreciate you. Any of you who have come in since the meeting started and have not filled out a speaker card, we ask you to do that. Again, this is a very important part of our meeting. We appreciate all of you taking time out of your busy schedule to be here today. This is a great turnout, a great exhibition of our collective and your support of the work that we're all doing here in California on ocean protection. Can you hear me all right out there? You're still getting the feedback? Is it getting better? I consciously move back. I think it gets better. I have a tendency to want to climb right up into the microphone. So thank you for reminding me. Okay, let's, if we might, I'll ask if Steve McAdam from BCDC come up, followed by David Lewis. Make your comments, if you can make them succinct, 3 to 5 minutes, no more, please, and then allow us to get through the large number of cards that we have today. Steve, nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Chair Chrisman.
Perhaps Christmas.
All right.
And other distinguished members of the council.
Okay.
My name is Steve McAdam, Deputy Director of the San Francisco Bay Conservation and Development Commission, or BCDC. And it's interesting to note that David Lewis, one of the prime movers and representing Save the Bay, one of the prime movers and shakers that established BCDC, is following this. Perhaps you should be
careful what you say.
Yes. I'm here speaking on behalf of Will Travis, our Executive Director, who has a good fortune of being in Vancouver on business today. We wish to welcome you to the San Francisco Bay Area, named for the beautiful estuarine resource right outside the window, and we applaud your efforts on behalf of the California coast and ocean. 40 years ago, state coastal management got started right here in San Francisco with the creation of BCDC, which became the example for the Federal Coastal Zone Management Program. BCDC shares California's coastal management program with our sister partners, the Coastal Commission and the State Coastal Conservancy, and we fully support your decision to address coastal and estuarine resources as part of your charge, because without protection of the coastal zone, ocean resource protection efforts will be unsuccessful. And we are pleased to see that today you are considering a laudable project in San Francisco Bay for eelgrass and native oyster restoration. Please let us know when we can help you in your charge. We stand willing and able. Thank you very much.
Thanks for being here. David Lewis, followed by Peter Grinnell.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Council. Thank you very much for coming here to San Francisco and to San Francisco Bay. I'm David Lewis. I'm the Executive Director of Save the Bay, and we've been working for 4 decades to try to protect and restore San Francisco Bay. And BCDC, we consider one of our hallmark successes, but we didn't quit after that. We're still working actively and have had the pleasure of working with many of you on those issues. I want to thank you for acknowledging with your presence here, and I think the turnout also acknowledges, as does your agenda, that this bay is really part and parcel of your mission, and should and must be within the scope of activities that you take on. We support your mission and efforts, and we stand ready to help you. In this morning's paper, Warner Chabot, who I'm sure you'll hear from later, commented that we know more about what the dark side of the moon looks like than the bottom of our own oceans. And it's actually true here in the bay. We know more about the shoreline and both the challenges and opportunities for restoration and habitat on the shoreline than we do about what's under the surface. 6 years ago, that really changed, because a large group of scientists and agencies and NGOs came together and did a scientific study that resulted in a consensus blueprint about what we need, what we still have, what we used to have, and what we need in the way of shoreline, especially tidal habitats around the bay. And that was based on what actual species need to survive. We don't have that for what's below the surface of the bay, and we desperately need it as a companion piece. Fortunately, NOAA and BCDC and other agencies have recognized this need. They're working to try to create a similar or parallel scientific research effort. And in the spirit of Mr. Nava's request for suggestions, I'd like to respectfully put that on your longer-term agenda. And We've already expressed our strong support for one of the pilot projects that's on your agenda today that addresses oil, eelgrass and oyster restoration here in the Bay. And what I'm talking about could really build upon that over time. So I encourage you to look at that. For salmon and other fisheries restoration, for pollution from runoff, both ag and urban, these issues that you're addressing and others with respect to the ocean, they're all crucial and critical here in the Bay and the Delta. So I encourage you to keep us on your radar screen, and we'll keep you on your radar screen, and please let us know how we can help, and thank you for your work.
Great, David. Thanks for coming. Appreciate it. Appreciate you being here. Peter Brunel, followed by Michelle Moss.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Council. I'm Peter Grinnell, General Manager of San Mateo County Harbor District. We're an independent special district, uniquely placed because we operate two harbors, one at Pillar Point on Half Moon Bay on the ocean, and Oyster Point Marina in South San Francisco on the bay. So we face a selection of interesting issues. I'm here only to comment on Councilmember Nava's comment about the importance of cooperative interactions and work with a variety of institutions, agencies, local folks, and so on. As a local agency, we're quite aware of and interested in your activities and your charge, and stand ready to assist you and work with you in any way that is useful in carrying out your goals and objectives. We've made our awareness and our interests known to Brian Baird and Sam Shippett, and would be most interested in following up as is useful. So thank you very much.
We'll definitely take you up on it. Thank you very much. Michelle Moss, followed by Tom Brown.
Good morning. My name is Michelle Moss. I'm from Senator Barbara Boxer's office. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. As Mr. Shookit mentioned, Senator Boxer has introduced BOB, or the National Ocean Protection Act of 2005, which is Senate Bill 1224. Sharing your concern for the future health of our oceans, Senator Boxer introduced this legislation based on the recommendations of the Pew Oceans Commission and the National Ocean Committee reports that were released last year. At the time of her announcement Thursday morning, she had over 132 endorsements from national, state, and local organizations focused on coastal protection, as well as local and state elected officials. And to your interest, I do want to point out that there is a savings clause in her bill that prevents any portion of the federal legislation from overriding the work of the California Ocean Protection Council. Hopefully, we will see greater collaboration on the state and federal levels in efforts to protect our ocean. I brought several copies of the bill summary, which I put on the table outside. If there's anyone in the room that would like a copy or more information and didn't get any, please let me know. You can get in contact with me later. I also would like to tell you that Senator Boxer would love to have the council's support and everyone's support in this room, so please let me know. Please feel free to contact me about that later. And lastly, I do want to announce also Senator Boxer's National Marine Sanctuary Expansion Act legislation that she introduced a few weeks back. It's a companion bill to Congresswoman Lynn Woolsey's bill, and I did see Tom Roth here from Congresswoman Woolsey's office who will be telling you a bit about that, so I'll stop there. Thank you very much.
Michelle, thank you. We will definitely take a close look at the legislation we'll be talking to you about. This sounds like something that as a council we need to take an active role in.
So great. I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Tom Brown, followed by Richard Charter.
Thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak briefly. And Mr. Crishman and members of the committee, I want to thank you for your good work. This is probably a little bit beyond the what you folks would do, but on Wednesday, I'm the author of The Dolphin's View, a science fiction story. On Wednesday, I delivered a statement signed on by several prominent environmental organizations, including the Sierra Club of the U.S. and Canada, Ocean Conservancy, NRDC, and a few others, condemning the Japanese dolphin slaughters and I delivered it to the Japanese consulate here in San Francisco. This is beyond what you guys are charged with doing, but I just wanted to do that for if there's anything that any input that you would have on that issue. And I want to thank you for your good work. I wanted to add my voice to everybody else in the public for supporting Senator Boxer's proposed bill and the work done by Pew and the U.S. Oceans Commission. I wanted also to add my voice in support of marine sanctuaries and in opposition to oil and gas development off our coast. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. Richard Charter, followed by Rebecca Smythe.
My name is Richard Charter, and for the last 15 years, I've served as co-chair of the National OCS Coalition. Thank you for your attention to the critical range of issues that you're addressing today and as you move forward. When I was growing up, I was taught early on not to yell fire in a crowded theater or in a crowded hearing room like this one. Unless the fire is
great
real.
Idea.
Unless the fire is real. Today, I must let you know, for the California coast, the fire is real. It is here now. And everything that Californians value about their coastline is in the balance on the floor of the U.S. Senate as it considers an energy bill next week, next Wednesday, to be specific. As the energy bill comes to the Senate floor, we first expect a knockdown, drag-out floor fight in an effort to strike from the bill a requirement for an exploratory oil and gas seismic survey or seismic inventory within all outer continental shelf waters, including within all of the sensitive areas protected until now by a 24-year congressional OCS moratorium. We're talking about Mendocino. We're talking about Orange County. We're talking about Palos Verdes. We're talking about San Diego. We're talking about the crown jewels of the California coast next Wednesday in a single vote. The bipartisan amendment to strike this egregious provision will be carried by Republican Senator Mel Martinez of Florida and his Democratic colleague Senator Bill Nelson, also of Florida, and a similar amendment to strike a similarly ill-advised seismic inventory fell to defeat on the Senate floor back in June of 2003, although that energy bill never saw the light of day and never saw final passage in the Senate. We dodged a bullet in 2003. Next week, the dynamics may be more bipartisan, and this amendment to strike the OCS inventory could actually prevail this time. They might have to wheel in Dick Cheney to break the tie. And we're talking about the seismic industry being the swing vote in that case. I encourage all of your agencies, together and individually, to weigh in now on the Hill to ensure that this constructive amendment is adopted. That's not the only challenge facing the California coast next week. Democratic Senator Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, in conjunction with Republican Senator George Allen from Virginia, is threatening to offer up to three separate floor amendments aimed at removing or undermining longstanding congressional protections for California's coast and other coasts. One such amendment, if adopted, would immediately rescind the White House executive OCS leasing deferrals first put in place by former President George Herbert Walker Bush in 1991, when he became known as the environmental president with that action. A second proposed amendment that we call the Coast Killer amends the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act in such a manner as to coerce coastal states to opt out of the OCS moratorium. And once they did, no similar protection could ever be reinstituted by any future Congress nor by any future administration, no matter who's elected. It's like a one-way trap. A third proposed Landrieu Allen amendment would declare that any offshore tract on which drilling was delayed for any reason by Congress, by moratorium, by legitimate state consistency review process would be eligible for reimbursement of the lessee under a takings claim. Think about your 36 tracts at Point Conception if that amendment's adopted. The good news is that Americans throughout the nation are still in love with their coastal national treasures. This year's concerted attack on our coastal protections is not going over very well in Washington. On the floor of the House of Representatives last month, the proposed oil industry amendment to strip out the words natural gas from the congressional moratorium nationwide was defeated by over a 100-vote margin. We were joined in winning the House vote by the chairs of all of the appropriations committees, the chairs of all the authorizing committees, and even by Tom DeLay. Why? Because from the state level to the halls of Congress, the protection of our coast has always been a bipartisan effort. That's how it works. That's how we got 20. This would be the 25th anniversary of the congressional moratorium if we don't get sidetracked next week. Our own Ocean Action Plan addresses the need to preserve the California coast in the face of these kind of threats. The governor's letter on the energy bill helped to turn the tide on the House floor. There's no doubt about it. Look at all the votes from that side of the aisle that moved our way. And we thank you for your own work and your own letter on this same topic. Bipartisan effort on behalf of the California coast worked last month. It needs to work again next Wednesday. Within the policy theater in which coastal protection decisions for our state are made, now fully engulfed in flames, I hope that your agencies and this body itself will once again join the volunteer fire department. From so many coastal states that is right now fighting this conflagration in the U.S. Senate, a number of senators have placed a hold on unanimous consent to proceed to the bill as a result of this fight. First and foremost, the governor needs to make a couple of select phone calls, starting with calling Representative George Allen of Virginia and telling him to back off on his current ill-advised efforts to open the California coast to offshore drilling. For a Virginia senator with apparent presidential aspirations, it's hard to imagine Senator Allen ever being able to even organize a campaign swing through either Florida or California if his amendment is adopted. He would be so embarrassed he would not make it past scenic downtown Wheeling. With your help, the leadership of our governor, with our own senators, we can again put this fire out. We can go on to continue to enjoy the benefits of our coastal dependent economy and the awesome, inspiring natural beauty of our coast. Thank you for your consideration.
I appreciate those comments. Just by you noted in your comments the defeat of the gas provision. Essentially, that was the Peterson Amendment last month. And we were very active in that.
I observed that.
Trying to make sure that happened. And again, we're continuing to work very hard to try to preserve, of course, that moratorium. We make those comments. And
right.
We'll be making them as we move forward. I'm going to be at Western Governors Association starting on Sunday.
Right.
We're going to be having some meetings on Monday on these issues, and so we'll make this known also.
As you probably noticed, the Wall Street Journal this week said that the energy bill's fate is entangled with this OCS outcome.
Right, right.
And particularly with the governors of California and Florida. And they're absolutely right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Rebecca Smythe, followed by Orville Lagoon.
Thank you, Secretary Chrisman, members of the council. I'm Becky Smythe, California Regional Coordinator for NOAA Ocean Service Coastal Services Center. NOAA Ocean Service programs and employees here in California would like to publicly express our support for the state of California's work on ocean protection efforts. These programs, which include the National Marine Sanctuary Program, the Office of Coast Survey, the National Geodetic Survey, the Office of Response and Restoration, the Office of Ocean and Coastal Resource Management's Marine Protected Area Center, and the Coastal Services Center, have been partners with a number of state agencies over the years in helping protect and balance people's use of the coast with the protection of ocean and coastal resources. As you will note, we have a number of letters of support for most of the pilot projects that you'll be considering today, and we look forward to continuing these partnerships and working with the council. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you coming. Paul Magoon, followed by Tim Eichenberg. Welcome, Will. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. It's an honor to be here with Lieutenant Governor and to speak before this commission, and particularly my good colleague, Brian Beard, who's worked with it for many years. I'd like to address two topics. The first is, all of you are familiar with the recent tsunami damage that occurred in the Indian Ocean. You know that part of a major infrastructure of the nation, and particularly of California, is in our ports and harbors. And there are recent publications concerning the impact of tsunamis on the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach, etc. I'd like to suggest that you might consider whether you might want to ask the Secretary of Army or other appropriate agencies to see whether it be possible to modify existing structures such as the Los Angeles and Long Beach Harbor breakwaters to reduce the impact of tsunamis. The recent article published in Civil Engineering magazine suggests that there might be up to 1 year shutdown of those ports with a tsunami. Technical analysis believes those damage numbers to be overstated, but it's still something to consider, and I'd be glad to furnish the details of both comments in support of this and against those numbers for your consideration.
If you would, please do. Okay.
A second thing I'd like to talk about is, now that I've worked full-time on trying to understand why the coast is eroding, I was surprised to find that the answer that we found was nothing that has been supported in the studies to date. And so what it looked like is, in going through the literature since the turn of the century, 1.4 billion cubic meters of sediment have been lost to the Pacific coast since 1950 due to various anthropogenic or works of man. Unfortunately, the largest loss is due to something that is very much a need, but it also is a problem. That is the sand and gravel mining. And so really what it amounts to is that of all the losses on the coast, roughly, it looks like 80% of the loss, or more or less, is due to sand and gravel mining. When we lose the sediment along the coast, in fact, the waves, the beaches degrade, and in fact, when the beaches degrade, the waves attack the coast, and in fact, of course, then we have what's called erosion. And the economist that I write with, economist Linda Lent, calls those unpriced externalities. And I suggest that you might wish to consider those unpriced externalities in the analysis of your problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Council Chair, appreciate you being here.
Yes, if I might just add to that, Mr. Magoon. I have an assembly bill, and I'm not promoting my... Actually, I am. I have an assembly bill that is directed to precisely that problem. And yes, and it is... has to do with recycled road base material.
How do I find that?
Where's my staff person here? See that hand? Andrea Grant is my staffer. And what it calls for is for Caltrans to increase the use of recycled road base material, concrete and asphalt, establish statewide standards, immediately go to 50%, a report in 2 years, and then 75% recycled road base. You're right in terms of what happens with the gravel. We're getting a lot of our gravel now from Canada and Mexico, because communities in California won't permit a gravel extraction, although there's still a lot of it going on. And by our calculations, and supported by others in the assembly as well, we can save $21 million a mile on an 8-lane, 1-mile freeway by using recycled gravel. It doesn't go into the landfill, and it will reduce the need for extraction from stream beds.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Tom Eichenberg, followed by Donna Solomon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the council. My name is Tim Eichenberg. I'm representing the Ocean Conservancy. I'd like to talk about two things. One is aquaculture, which Assemblymember Nava brought up. And there's a federal bill that is being considered now to establish a regulatory program for aquaculture that is completely devoid of any standards in the 3 to 200-mile zone. In the state, the Ocean Conservancy is a sponsor of a bill, Senate Bill 768, which passed the Senate and is now will be before the Assembly Water Parks and Wildlife Committee on Tuesday, which the Ocean Conservancy highly recommends to the council. It has a complete list of standards that would mitigate all the impacts that marine fish aquaculture could impose on California coastal waters. The second thing I'd like to talk about is the marine protected area network that is languishing in the Channel Islands National Marine Sanctuary. We'd like to commend the state for its efforts to try to complete that network of marine reserves in the Channel Islands. Unfortunately, the sanctuary and the council are mired now in a dispute over how to prepare the fishing regulations for these marine protected areas. As Secretary Christman is very well aware, he's kind enough to meet with us about it. This could severely delay the establishment of the reserve network. The council is resisting a request to draft fishing regulations to put into the draft environmental impact statement to implement the preferred reserve network that was already agreed to through a lengthy joint stakeholder process and presented to the Fish and Game Commission in 2001. Instead, the council wants the sanctuary to examine alternatives under the Marine Sanctuary, under the Magnuson-Stevens Act, which could lead to significant delays and make it very difficult to provide for comprehensive and permanent ecosystem protection at the Channel Islands that could be provided under the National Marine Sanctuaries Act. So we believe the Sanctuaries Act provides the best approach for establishing reserves at the Channel Islands, and we urge the state to continue its efforts to expedite the completion of the federal reserves, which should proceed under the National Marine Sanctuaries Act. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your comments. Donna Solomon, followed by Craig Schumann.
Real fun. Chairman, council members, in an effort to be quick, I didn't write anything down. We all know that if I write something down, we're all in trouble. Number one, in reference to the parking, I was told and praying upon the council that if I got one of the council members' business cards with a signature on it, that I could have either a zero or very, very minimal fee for my parking. So I pray against you guys.
Is that a credit card or was that a
just
what
a business card?
Okay. All right.
Second, I'm from Moss Landing, and there have been several fishermen, according to the fund that you have available, there's been several fishermen with vessels and businesses that are interested in selling out their property rights and vessels, gear, equipment to the council underneath that funding. And what we needed to know was how to go about that. If you have some sort of form that we fill out, several of us have already gotten together 7 years profit and loss statements, landings, have assets listed in an effort to get this done quickly.
Please.
Oh, that was my question.
Oh, yeah.
That was number two.
Yeah, Sam's going to talk a little bit about this. Mr. Shukat, in his report, will be talking a little bit about this. We have been in conversations at the federal level about buyout program, to what extent we can participate in it. Quite frankly, we think it has merit. We're not quite there yet. We need to do some more work. But Sam's going to. There's a little bit about it in his report. Okay?
Okay. And the third thing is, what I handed you is a pass out that we've been doing in the Central Coast, especially in Moss Landing and in Half Moon Bay. Several of us were approached by an organization last September to represent us in this effort and had been told by this organization that there was a possibility of them purchasing us out and then getting reimbursement from that grant. Now, when they were approached about timing, we were told December of last year is when we would all be purchased out, but no later than March. As a company, Solomon Life Fish in Moss Landing, in an effort to do good business, as everyone should do, we gave 6 months' notice to all our vendors, as well as to our clients, that we would do this. And so therefore, as of March, we've been down to a very minimal. Instead of 25 to 50 fishermen now dealing with us, we had given them not only other buyers, but actually urged them to find another buyer because of our closeout. And so now we're down to two fishermen actually purchasing through us. We are now basically slowly chopping up our business and selling it piece by piece, getting a fraction of what our business was actually valued at 2 years ago. And this is another reason why we needed to know about how far you guys were on the grant and everything. There's not only us, but there's other fishermen that have already started doing this as well. I wanted to make note that I did give his reply in an attachment to my letter. I sent that letter not only to the governor, but in addition to that organization's headquarters, as well as their organization headquarters here in San Francisco.
Okay.
And that was the reply I got. And I want to reimburse again that we started this last September. This was not a quick job. We were told that this last March that we would have been purchased out. So we're talking in well over 8 months.
Okay. Don, I'm sorry about this. We will. What I'm looking at is your letter, and then the response that you received. I'm going to ask Mr. Schubert to take a look at this. Again, this is news to us. So let's see what we can do to help him.
Yeah, I emailed you last month, and the response was to come here and talk to you about it. So that's what I wanted to do. Because there's several of us that are highly upset. There's always been one purchase that he did do, and it was at one fifth of the value of the permits on that and that federal one. And we do not want these people. We urgently recommend to the council to not negotiate their representation on our fisheries behalf.
Have you taken this to the Fish and Game Commission?
No, I was told to come to this because it has to do with this council's and the funding that is available through it, according to that one about buying out.
Okay, great. We'll get cracking on this and see what we can find out.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you for coming. I appreciate that. Craig Schumann, followed by Kate Wing.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the council. I'm Dr. Craig Schumann. I'm currently a staff scientist for Heal the Bay, Santa Monica Bay, not San Francisco Bay, and soon to be the director of Reef Check California. Thank you for your efforts on the council and the opportunity to speak before you today. Effective monitoring and enforcement, as well as a strong marine conservation constituency, is critical to the successful implementation of the MLPA initiative and long-term success of marine reserves along California's coast. Unfortunately, as the council is well aware, there is a distinct positive resources to thoroughly monitor and effectively enforce existing and possible new marine reserves. Reef Check California, a new initiative of the Reef Check Foundation, is developing a scientific monitoring program that will involve members of the public led by qualified marine biologists. The Reef Check California program will fill many of the gaps in the existing monitoring network, will help to build a local marine conservation constituency, and will aid enforcement efforts. While the ultimate goal is to establish a statewide program, the initial stages will focus on the Central Coast. To achieve these goals, we intend to tap into the large and diverse marine users along California's coast and to work closely with Department of Fish and Game Initiative staff, Department of Fish and Game staff, and MLPA Initiative staff. To maximize the efficacy of this new effort, we ask for your support and guidance as we develop and implement the new program. Thank you.
Great. Appreciate you being here.
Yes, please do.
What will you be monitoring?
Pardon me?
What will you be monitoring?
We will be monitoring subtidal marine resources. We are in the process of developing the protocol. So we're going to use volunteer scuba divers to actually go out there and count fish resources. And we're going to work with Fish and Game and initiative staff to determine what questions do we really need to answer. And I plan to reach out to all stakeholders and work with the fishermen, work with the divers, surfers, anyone that uses the ocean, homeowners that live on the beach to assist with enforcement efforts to bring the whole community together.
So do you have an application for money to the council?
No, we do not.
You intend to have one?
We probably will at some point.
Sounds like a good idea.
Nice.
Kate, followed by Tom Roth.
Thank you, members of the council. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our comments on these issues today. A lot of the things I wanted to testify on have been touched on, so I will just touch on them briefly as well. On the Marine Life Protection Act, I think it's an excellent idea to have a state update at these meetings, and we would just like to add our support for the Marine Life Protection Act process. We think it's functioning very well. The regional stakeholder groups have just been implemented, and they just met earlier this week, and we're pleased that there has been a continued level of commitment and support from the state. The last I checked the state budget, there was also some state money to keep the MLPA process going, and I'm hoping that's still there. That's important. It's important that in this public-private partnership, it is still public and private together, and not just private. And we're very optimistic. We hope that this is going to give us a result that's really good for all the members of the state, but we definitely encourage the Ocean Protection Council to stay up to date and to make sure that the process is continuing on track. On the Channel Islands, Tim spoke briefly about our concerns. The state has maintained a very strong position that the feds need to hold up their end of the bargain and complete their side of the Channel Islands process and complete that network. And we would just encourage the state to continue to hold that line, to continue to be very emphatic that the feds promised to do what they said they were going to do, and it's time for them to do that. And in particular to hold that line at the Pacific Fishery Management Council meetings and to make it very clear at the meeting that's coming up next week that California intends to see that this network of marine protected areas is fully implemented at the Channel Islands, and they're not going to put up with any more messing around at the council level process. So we just ask you to sort of hold the line on that. It is very important because the other members of the council will take the lead from the state of California. And finally, on the oil and gas issues that Richard raised, we also have a very strong concern about them. And by the way, I realize I didn't introduce myself because I feel like I've known so many of these folks, but I'm Kate Wing with the Natural Resources Defense Council. And we have a strong interest in the oil and gas issues, and we have been working on them heavily at the federal level. A number of us just came back from D.C. For Capitol Hill Oceans Week and talking about this issue, among other issues. And in particular, if you're going to be at the Western Governors Association meeting next week, I would strongly encourage you to do those governor-to-governor level communications. We think those are essential at this point, that type of support from other governors saying it's an important states issue, as well as states wanting to hold the line about keeping that type of consistency, keeping that type of protection out into federal waters. That's where a lot of the political play seems to be happening. So really that kind of Governor Schwarzenegger to other key coastal governors we think is going to be critically important. And we thank you for the work and the messages and the strong sentiments that you guys have already sent out. So I appreciate your work here today and your upcoming work. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thanks, Kate. Just by way of adding to your comments, my report I talked a little bit about the meeting, an opportunity a few weeks back in Washington, met with Admiral Lautenbacher on the issue of marine reserves and federal waters off the Channel Islands, and again, we're continuing to urge the NOAA fisheries and others to step up and live up to their commitments, and we're pushing really hard now. We've gotten a response back from Mr. Bost on this issue, so again, we're continuing to do what we want. Anything you can do to help keep the pressure on, too, we'd really appreciate
it. We'll keep it up as long as we can. Thank you.
Thanks.
There's a multi-billion dollar facility that's being built in LNG, so you go down in Basel. Are you familiar?
Yes, I am. At the Coronado Islands?
Actually, off of the Baja Coast.
Are you referring to that? Okay.
Baja Coast.
Yeah.
There is an interest, once that has been completed, to sell gas and energy to California. We have had generally a policy in California not to purchase any energy or other kinds of commodities from groups that build south of the border, unless they build the standards that we have here in California. A perfect example are the energy facilities that we have that were built right across the border. One was built to California standards and is able to bring energy across the border, and another that was not built to California standards, which is not able to provide any energy to the state of California. I don't know exactly what they're doing down there. I haven't had a chance to get a briefing from the folks down there. But I have suggested to several different governmental groups in Mexico, as well as different companies who are involved in the LNG and energy business, that there should be some discussion about how they're building their facility on there, if they in fact do intend in the future to try to sell gas or energy to the state of California. Is your organization familiar with the standards that are being used down there?
I'm not personally familiar with them, but that doesn't mean that our folks who are tracking oil and gas issues or Mexico issues in particular haven't done that kind of review. So I'm happy to check back in with them and give you an update with your staffers to see if we've done any of that kind of review.
If you could contact me or Loretta, we really appreciate any information you have down there. We'd like to be able to step up the call to them to ensure that, in fact, they are building to the kind of standards that we would expect, and that just because they're south of the border doesn't mean that we're going to accept a different standard.
Right. Thanks for raising that, and I'm sure there's a number of groups in this room who would be happy to also get in touch with you with the information they have about that. So thanks for raising that.
Sure.
Thank you, Kate. Tom Roth?
Yes.
Thank you very much. I'm Tom Roth from Congresswoman Woolsey's office. Congresswoman Woolsey represents Marin and most of Sonoma County. And I'm a former teacher, so let me give you a handout very quickly.
Does it have pictures on it?
It does.
Oh, good.
You can draw it.
Okay.
Oh. You have to share your handouts. Well, that's another teaching technique.
Yeah.
Like a teacher, you still don't have enough resources.
Well, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak today. It's wonderful being in front of this group. It's great that California has taken this initiative to form this council, and it's wonderful also that you're working in such a bipartisan matter on some very important issues about our ocean. My colleague Michelle Moss from Senator Boxer's office spoke about Bob, the big ocean bill. I want to talk about what we could call SOB, the small oceans bill, which are the Sonoma oceans bill, because this is a piece of legislation that has been introduced in the House of Representatives and the Senate, by Senator Boxer and with Senator Feinstein as the original co-sponsor. And this would expand our two marine sanctuaries that are off of San Francisco and the Marin Coast and just a little part of the Sonoma Coast right now. They are the Cordell Bank National Marine Sanctuary and the Gulf of the Farallones National Marine Sanctuary. This bill would expand it so that the Gulf of the Farallones would move up actually all the way up from Bodega Bay, the southernmost point of Bodega Head, all the way up to the Walla River, or as people in Mendocino County say, Wallala River. So the entire Sonoma coast then would be under protection of marine sanctuary. It would also add a little pie slice to the Cordell Bank National Marine Sanctuary. This is an area that is known as Bodega Canyon. Researchers think that this is significant. It's a very deep trench. They think it may be one of the sources of the very powerful upwelling that occurs in this area. And it also sends the boundaries out a little bit west into deeper waters in order to provide more protection against offshore oil drilling. Basically, the bill's intention is, number one, protection against offshore oil drilling. It bans, puts in statutory language, actually changes the original protections for those two Gulf, marine sanctuaries, which now are just in regulations. It actually gives a statutory protection against offshore oil drilling and exploration, as well as pipelines across marine sanctuaries. It also prohibits discharges in the sanctuaries and harmful discharges that enter or injure resources in the sanctuaries, and that includes cruise ships, that includes the releasing of invasive species, and it also has some protections because of these bans against discharges, protections against for two important estuaries on the Sonoma coast, the Russian River Estuary, which and the Gualla River Estuary. Both estuaries have three endangered salmon species. The Russian River is especially impacted by development, and this would draw a line against any increase in pollution in these waters. Why the Sonoma coast? All of California needs to be protected, but we think that the Sonoma coast is among the best of the best waters off of California. This is an area that is part of the upwelling zone, the Farallones Point Arena upwelling zone, which is one of the most productive biological areas in the world, one of four of such areas that comprise about 1% of the world's oceans but produce about 20% of the world's fish. So these are very important areas to protect. When the National Marine Sanctuaries Program went through their joint review process that is still ongoing, they identified this area as one area that should be expanded. And in fact, when the Coastal Commission took our bill, went before the Coastal Commission, they looked at it and said that this area possibly exceeds the biological significance of some areas that are already under sanctuary protection. Also, the people of Sonoma County are very much behind this bill. We have a long tradition of coastal protection. You may remember in the 60s, we successfully beat the hole in the head, which was the attempt to build a nuclear reactor on Bodega Head. In the 70s, there was a big fight for coastal access up at Sea Ranch, which resulted in the Coastal Commission, the Coastal Protection Act. And we continue to fight against offshore oil. Richard Charter is probably the dean of of offshore oil fighters, and he's a resident and has also had been a great supporter of this piece of legislation. As far as the state of California, you're interested in it. Your interest generally is to protect the coast of California and certainly is to protect the fisheries resources, but there also are some very special interests along the Sonoma coast. First of all is the Bodega Marine Lab, which currently is not in the sanctuary. In fact, if you walk out its door, you're in unprotected waters. But if you go down a little bit south, you are in protected waters. But the Marine Sanctuary, or the Bodega Marine Lab, which is a UC Davis lab, has about $64 million of money invested in research in the area. We're doing very important work. And then there's the Sonoma State Beaches. There's a new Willow Creek State Park up the river. There's Fort Ross State Park, which also includes numerous miles of beaches. Salt Point State Park. So there is an enormous state investment in the Sonoma coast. So we are very much would like to have your support for this bill. We think it's a great bill. It has the support of the supervisors of Sonoma, Marin, San Francisco County, a number of cities. As I said, the Coastal Commission, National Sierra Club, the Bodega Bay Fishermen's Organization, and Pacific Coast Federation Fishermen's Associations, which is a mouthful, and a number of other organizations. We'd like your help in helping this move forward in Congress. We have the support of all the Democratic members of the House delegation. And, of course, Senator Boxer and Senator Feinstein, we think this is a bipartisan bill. I think we couldn't move this forward with your help. So thank you very much. And if you have any questions about it, I'd be glad to answer. And certainly feel free to contact me.
Great, Tom. Thank you. Thank you for those comments. We'll take it under advisement. Get the information to us, and we'll take a close look at it. Another
thank
very
you.
Important piece of legislation. Thanks for being here today. We appreciate it. That concludes the speaker cards, the public comment period on the non-agenda items. What I'd like to do, if I might, is to move to the next discussion is funding. I'd like now to turn it over to Sam Shuka, the executive officer of the State Coastal Conservancy and our council president, and Jerry Scunity, a board member of the State Water Resources Control Board. What about some of these funding recommendations for moving forward? Again, by way of reminder for the members, these materials are discussed under tab 5 in our binder. Sam.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the council, good morning. Sam Shuckup, secretary to the council. All of the documents that comprise this meeting are available on the website that the council has on the Resources Agency website, and that's a good thing to remind everyone now because we have run out of all of the things that we printed, so we didn't quite anticipate this kind of a crowd. We've run out, but if there's anything you want to read from this meeting, it's on the website. I also wanted to thank Amber Mace and Leah Akins on Brian's staff. Amber actually assembled a summary of public comment that we received before the meeting, 34 written comments as of June 3rd, I believe. And in fact, Kurt and Donna Solomon's issue is letter number 12 in your binder in the back, so you can read about that. you have in your notebooks, and the public has on our website, and also in printed form here, all of the documents that comprise Agenda Item 6. And rather than read them, I want to summarize them and focus your attention on the areas where your staff would like you to make some decisions. As you may recall, at your last meeting, you requested that I present you with an update on our funding situation, criteria and processes for project grant making, and a sense of what the big sea of ocean projects might look like, as well as some ideas about priority areas to focus on. The criteria and processes for grant making are in their own memo with an attachment under Item 6. And everything else I'm going to talk about is in the memo titled Ocean Protection Council Projects. First of all, our current funding situation. At its meeting in Fort Bragg in May of this year, the State Coastal Conservancy reserved $5 million in bond funds for projects recommended by this council. Under Item 7 in this agenda, we have four projects for your consideration that will come out of this $5 million. There continues to be in the budget now under consideration in the legislature $1.2 million of environmental license plate funds appropriated to the Coastal Conservancy for the work of the Ocean Council. In my memo, I gave you a gloomy picture of the prospects for getting up to $10 million of Tidelands oil money. Since writing this memo, I have learned that things are looking up again for this money, and it now seems increasingly likely that you will have at your disposal between $5 and $10 million from this funding source available by the end of the fiscal year. I have to tell you that working with the Tidelands Oil Fund has made me want to go on lithium. It's been so up and down. But right now, today, the news is good. So
today, it's good.
Today the news is
right.
good. So we'll stick with that. I'm also pleased to tell you that I've had some discussions with Al Wright, the executive officer of the State Wildlife Conservation Board, and he is interested in asking his board to take an action similar to what mine took and set aside $5 million for projects recommended by this council. I will continue to work with him to flesh this out, and hopefully at your September meeting I'll be able to report to you how that funding stream will work. Several speakers this morning talked about the need for more federal support, and often it does seem like the state is supporting the federal government and not the other way around. But I do want to thank Rebecca Smythe and her colleagues at the Coastal Services Center. The State Coastal Conservancy will have on staff for 2 years a loaned staff person from NOAA. Starting July 18th, I and my staff are very grateful and eager to have her on board. When the environmental license plate money becomes available, we expect to be able to hire a second position, a civil service position to help with this. I have had the first set of discussions with potential private funders for our work. There is interest in the private funding community. I have nothing definite to report to you. I couldn't get anybody to actually name an amount. But I will continue to pursue these discussions, and hopefully by September we'll have a little more clarity there. Finally, here to report to you on the actions that the State Water Resources Control Board is poised to take is Board Member Jerry Secundi. When Jerry is finished, I will come back and complete the discussion of Agenda Item 6.
Thank you, Sam. Remind the public what we'll do is when Sam finishes his overview, we'll ask for some comments from the public on these issues. Thank you. Jerry, nice to have you with us.
Good morning. It's great to be here. And thank you for the opportunity to address the council. I'm sorry that Mr. Noah is not here. I took part in this morning. It didn't cost $27.50. So. Before we get to specific funding for this project, I thought it might be helpful, at least for members of the audience, for me to review the history of the State Water Board when it comes to some of our funding for protecting the coastal waters of California. We have a long history of working to preserve, protect, and restore the coastal and ocean water quality. And obviously, we look forward to working with the council over the next few years, and especially protecting our state's 34 areas of special biological significance, which would include sites like Point Reyes, for example, on Nuevo, Carmel Bay, the real crown jewels of our ocean. Back in 2000, under Prop 13, the Water Board was allocated $90 million for coastal non-point source control. We went through three competitive grant cycles. The projects were to improve the water quality at public beaches, provide comprehensive monitoring, improve existing sewer collection and antiquated septic systems, and implement stormwater runoff reductions and preventions. These monies were awarded in consultation with the California Coastal Commission. Then under Prop 40 in the spring of 2002, there was an additional $46 million, and there have been two competitive grant cycles. The first phase was $21 million, and the second phase, there's a current solicitation for that based upon a location list adopted by the Water Board in April of this year. We've done this in consultation with a Clean Beach Task Force, and that task force includes the Coastal Commission, the Coastal Conservancy, local environmental health and sanitation agencies, researchers, and advocacy groups. Finally, in the fall of 2002, under Prop 50, there was another $100 million that was consistent with the Prop 13 coastal non-point source remedies. $20 million for Santa Monica Bay restoration, $7 million for California Ocean Coast Data Observing System, and in this particular budget year, we're looking at $37 million for coastal non-point source projects to be solicited as part of the Water Board's 2005 grants program, and $36 million for clean beaches. Now, the key to all of this, as far as the council is concerned, is the State Water Board is proposing to accelerate and dedicate $10 million of the funding previously scheduled for clean beaches for the ocean protection projects. We have had no opposition to this recommendation. Indeed, we've received letters of support from NRDC, the California Coast Keeper Alliance, the Ocean Conservancy, Defenders of Wildlife. It is currently put on our agenda for this coming Thursday, the 16th, and it is on the consent agenda, and we don't believe we're going to have any opposition to that. So I'm hopeful that as of the end of Thursday, I'll be able to tell you that we have dedicated $10 million. That's all of the, quote, good news. And before Dr. Lloyd steals my thunder, we'll talk a little bit about the process that we need to go through because of restrictions that are placed upon us when funds are allocated to the Water Board. The Water Board obviously has received hundreds of millions of dollars over the years and has a very large staff that monitors and implements the types of grants that we give. And we must, frankly, jump through a few hoops. Their guidelines are currently under development for this $10 million, and we anticipate a release of our draft guidelines in August. We will then have to go through a public comment period. We will be obviously working with the Coastal Conservancy, the Coastal Commission, and other research agencies and BDOs to help us with the review and the ranking. But the bottom line is we think we will have recommended projects brought back to this council in June of next year. That's a year from now. I will do everything I can to speed up that process, and Dr. Lloyd, I know, will urge me in that direction, and I'm more than happy to go in that direction. That's my report. Any questions?
Any questions or comments? No?
Well, hey, Jerry, thank you for that summary, and great thank you for the $10 million, and I really look forward to working with the Water Board. I think that's great. As you know, you and I have been talking about that. I would also maybe like to ask Julian or the Congressman now, if he's not here, but anything the legislature could do, because, again, when we talk about trying to get money to work, looking from the outside and knowing the governor wants to reduce bureaucracies here, try to expedite, there's any way in which we could work with the legislature maybe on some of these grants to see if we could streamline the process.
Alan, that's an excellent suggestion, and Craig Wilson and Celeste Cantu and I will meet specifically on that to see if we can't get some relief and still keep an open and public process.
Okay, thank you. Jerry, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Good news, great. Sam?
I just wanted to ask, does the council have any questions for me about any of the funding issues that I talked about?
I'll have a general concern. We didn't receive this until yesterday when we received the binder. So we really haven't had a chance to look through all of the consequences of this proposal. Although we think that the many of the projects, we wouldn't want to hold up any of the projects that we see before us right now, I would like to have some more time. to review the document. It has nothing to do with any specific concerns. We just haven't had a chance to really review the document. So I don't know exactly what we could do to deal with that particular issue. At the same time, I would like to move forward on these funding.
Let me address. I'm actually going to. I can address that as I move through my remarks, because some of what you have before you were seeking approval for, but some of it actually we don't want you to act precipitously and approve today. We'd like you to take public comment, think about it, bring it back to a future meeting.
And you'll be recommending those actions.
Yeah. So let me. Yeah. So the bulk of the memo that I wrote about projects is concerned with the question of what to spend money on. And I tackled it in two ways in that memo. First of all, I did something a little risky. I attached a list of potential projects. It's organized by project type and by potential funding source. It's meant to give you an idea of...
So what section are we on now? Are we moving on to the pilot project discussion?
No.
Okay. All right.
Not yet. No. We're talking about the memo that's in tab 4 of your
binder.
Tab
4. Thank you.
Okay.
And I'd also like to raise some issues on your selection criteria and application guidelines.
That's next. Right. So that's the memo that I'm talking about right now is the one that says Ocean Protection Council projects.
Got it.
Okay. There is nothing in that memo that we are asking you to approve today. It is simply our musings about what a program could look like. And as I said, I took two different cuts at it. One was I said, well, what's the universe of potential things that we could do? Here's a great big long list. It's not a definitive list. We're happy to add things to it. We will certainly be taking things off of it. And just so that everybody staying behind me is clear, the presence of any particular item on the list does not mean that it will get funded, and the absence of any particular project does not mean that it won't get funded. So it's just to give you a picture.
We took it that way,
yes.
Sam. Frankly, thank you for taking that risk and laying it all out like this. We took it as a general working document.
Right.
It's just so we haven't been able to collapse our thinking and focus it in order to be able to look at the priorities and the projects and do exactly what you're asking us to do, to work through it, have some input so that we might be able to offer it, and it just we couldn't do it overnight.
Right, so. Right. And I apologize for that. It's a new process.
I want to make sure that we're not put in a position where we're going to have to approve the priorities, et cetera, so today, and just have a chance to be able to work through those things with you, obviously.
Okay. So the second way that I dealt with the question of what projects should happen is I suggested areas that the council could focus on and in our opinion ought to focus on. And those are in the memo that I'm talking about. And in order, those are supporting long-term marine protected area monitoring, establishing a fisheries revolving loan fund, which is called for in your statute, coordinating and integrating water quality monitoring with a focus on critical coastal areas, implementing the invasive species plan that was outlined in Senator Carnett's bill of several years ago, establishing a goal with mapping at high resolution the seafloor for all state waters from the surf zone out to the 3-mile limit, and supporting the integration of our ocean observing and research efforts coastwide. So I'm not asking that you do anything with that now other than take public comment and mull it over. And we can talk about when you want to, when and how you'd like to adopt a set of priorities like that.
Sam, following that, you say process for funding.
Right.
You say you want to make it user-friendly, which I fully concur. And you're indicating that the grant seekers are being encouraged to write a relatively short proposal that can be supplemented once the council determines the project would fit in. Does that mean to say we'd have to come back to the council so we'd have any way in which you could do that rather than otherwise we're going to lose another 3 months or so?
Here. guys are jumping ahead here. Yeah, so the second piece in this package is actually a separate memo that talks about, that is called Interim Funding Project Selection and Application Guidelines. And this is meant to address the question of, in the short run, particularly with the $5 million from the Coastal Conservancy, how should we proceed? How should people that have projects communicate with the council and get in the queue? And what sorts of things should your staff bring to you for funding? They're interim in several different ways. First of all, you know, they can be changed at any time. They were written most specifically with the Coastal Conservancy $5 million in mind, because that's the money that we have now and can do things with now. They will inform the Water Board's decision-making process, but there's a lot more work that has to take place between the Council and the Board and at the staff level to help with those guidelines. And as different funding sources come online, you know, we may have to make some modifications. This is something that we'd like you to at least consider adoption of at this meeting, because it would bring some order to a process which has been a little free flowing, and that is outlined in, like I said, in a separate memo. It's tab 5 in your binders, and we have a memo that describes what, you know, why we're recommending what we recommend, and then we have the actual policy that we're recommending.
You're under tab 5, titled Interim Funding Project Selection right. Application Guidelines.
Right.
Gotcha.
So that completes my presentation on item 6. I'm happy to take questions, and we have a fair amount of public comment.
Any further questions or comments?
Well, again, the guidelines are fairly comprehensive, but there's also a lot of gotchas there as far as I'm concerned. On the end of applying for that, for example, project approval must have demonstrable support from the public. Do you have a better definition of that?
Demonstrable?
Demonstrable?
The public. Well, what's the public?
Well, the public.
Yeah. We, you know, the rule of thumb at the Coastal Conservancy is, in particular, projects have to have support letters from elected officials who are elected by the public in the areas where the projects come from, plus other potential proponents. And when we get to agenda item 7, you'll see how that works. It is a admittedly somewhat amorphous concept, but I guess the idea is that there need to be people that represent large groups of people that support these projects.
And then on the next one, developing, submitting project proposals. Part of my concern there is you developed a process which is good to outline it, but is there any time constraints that has to be submitted to you then to get back to the people? I guess, so we are being asked to approve these guidelines, it gets back
well,
to...
You're being asked to approve and consider if you want to make modifications to them, that's absolutely fine.
Alan, you're suggesting in these guidelines there ought to be a timeline for submittal or return, is that what you're saying?
I'm just concerned that we try to expedite this. I recognize that, you can see where my overall thrust is. This is a key issue. If we're, rather than trying to make this responsive to what the governor wants on the Protection Act, rather than building another bureaucracy, which is difficult to get the monies out and be as effective as possible.
Julia?
I'd actually like to speak to that. I think the Conservancy doesn't typically use a specific grant round schedule. It's sort of an ongoing process that they use where projects come in and are analyzed on an ongoing basis, which I think it actually speaks well to your concern for getting things moving as quickly as possible. And I'd actually like to maintain that. I think that that's a very useful process to be able to use. And I think the Conservancy also has a good track record of being able to work with project partners, which again goes back to your question about public support. So I think, at least for the time being, that that's probably the most flexible program that we could be using. So I'm would be in favor of keeping that going.
Describe a little bit of the time frame involved here. I mean, usually, when how do you handle it in the Conservancy?
Well, the way we handle it and the way we're suggesting handling it is that the first thing anybody that is seeking council funding should do is to call us and talk to us about their project, because we really don't want projects for which there is no applicable funding. We don't want people to spend a lot of time writing proposals for projects that we just can't fund because there's no funding, or because, you know, we know that there's no way that the council would approve it. It doesn't fit with any existing priority. If they jump over that hoop, then the next step is to write your ideas down on paper in a simple kind of form and engage in a dialogue with the staff to start to flesh it out. So that we can ask a lot of questions like, is this going to need CEQA, and how long is this going to take? And
in that first hoop, though, is there anything in writing?
No. Well, no, and people have been calling. I mean, it's already started, really. People have already started calling us up. And
I think that's good in one way, but on the other hand, it would be good to just have something in writing, because otherwise somebody come back to maybe a member here and say, well, We talked and we didn't get any satisfactory responses. Have something.
Right. You'll hear that either way. I guarantee you will hear from
indeed,
people.
That's right.
Okay. Other comments or questions from the panel members? Council members? Okay. Thanks a lot, Sam.
Okay.
Appreciate it. We'll go now to the public comments on this.
Just on that one last issue, because it. My earlier comment, when you said I'd come back to the council, do we delegate that then to Sam, or do we have to?
Ultimately, these are projects that you have to approve. So the staff job in our mind is to develop things to the point where we think they would meet with your approval, would fit with whatever guidelines you adopt and fit with the proposed funding source.
So the point it comes to us, we basically say yay or nay.
Right.
It wouldn't have to go back unless we had some concerns or needed some additional information.
Correct. Now, so for instance, there are four projects under item 7 that come from the $5 million from the Coastal Conservancy. One reason we put it, you know, asked to have this on the agenda today was we thought it would be best if kind of had a live fire exercise and you actually saw how this worked. If you say yes, I'm just thinking in those terms because the Coast Guard has been going up and down outside, providing security for the council, obviously.
I've had plenty of live fire exercises. I don't know that I need another one, Sam, but I think that the projects that have been submitted are very, very good projects, so, and that's why I don't want to stop that process from moving forward.
If you say yes to those projects, then they go to my board, which has to review them because it's money that was appropriated to the Coastal Conservancy. And if they say yes to the projects, so there's no reason to think after you've said yes that they would say no, then those projects will happen. If you say no to any one of the projects, then I will pull them from the Coastal Conservancy's agenda on Friday.
Oh, they've already been approved. Okay.
No, they have not already been approved. In other words, you are the first stop, and you are the you're the first ask, if you will. Okay.
Other questions or comments? Good discussion. Thank you, Sam. Now going to the public comments on item 6 on the agenda, the funding discussion that we just had. I'd like to call up Holly Brown Williams, followed by Burr Henneman.
Good morning. My name is Holly Brown Williams. I'm with the School of Public Health at UC Berkeley, and I thank you for hearing me today. The California Ocean Protection Act addresses a broad range of ecosystem issues, and I commend the Council for considering so many important actions to protect Californians' ocean and coastal environment. One issue missing from the Act is an explicit focus on public health as part of a broader environmental protection. There are significant health implications of many of our ocean and coastal activities. For example, in the San Francisco Bay Delta, mercury contamination poses major challenges for the health of local communities that fish for commercial, recreational, or cultural reasons. Along the Palos Verdes Shelf in Southern California, DDT contamination will persist in the environment for some time, despite major remediation efforts. Public education and outreach will, about the health risks of consuming local fish will be necessary for years. In Humboldt County, commercially produced oysters have been contaminated by dioxin, posing health risks for shellfish consumers. As with mercury, this example raises some significant questions about what actions are appropriate when pollutants that have affected the fish threaten health and are not traceable to a single source. As David Lewis of Save the Bay just mentioned, throughout the state, urban and agricultural runoff results in contamination of fish in local waters that are caught for human consumption. On a larger scale, plans to expand California ports will pose human and ecosystem health risks to our water and air with the introduction of non-native species and bilge water and diesel exhaust from ships idling near shore. A group of academic, state, and federal agency representatives has developed a project concept to address fish contamination in California. Like COPA, this project has been structured to examine government mandates relevant to fish and water body contamination and to formulate an action plan to reduce fish contamination and protect human health and the environment. I encourage the Council to consider supporting this work under the auspices of COPA, which will ensure that the findings and recommendations have the added authority of Council endorsement. Despite a wealth of knowledge and technologies that can be used for pollution prevention in our oceans and coasts, people are still getting sick due to environmental exposures, and environments continue to be degraded. These problems are usually not solved by technological actions alone and usually have to have active public involvement. The Fish Contamination Project is structured as a stakeholder-driven process that would bring community members together with scientists and public officials to effect real change. I appreciate the opportunity to bring this project to your attention and will provide the Council with additional information after the meeting. Thank you very much.
Please do so.
Thank you.
Yes, please, Chris.
I would direct you to Paul Thayer of the State Lands Commission. We have been dealing with the issue of invasive species, the issue of transfer, water transfer, especially from long-distance ports along the Pacific Rim. We know that we are a port for the nation, and most goods and services run through our ports for the entire nation. As a result, we get a tremendous amount of ships from all over the world. We have completely different standards. We, I believe, although we believe we haven't done enough yet, are way out in front of most ports in the U.S. You might want to check with Paul to see some of the work that's been done already. It might give you a basic background on existing activities.
Great, thank you.
Paul, sure. Paul is behind the hiding, behind the
deal back there.
Wait, Paul. Wave something up. All right, good. Thanks.
Great, thank
Thanks.
You.
Thanks. Thank you very much. Okay, Burr Henneman, followed by Kurt Solomon. Burr?
Good morning. Good
morning.
Secretary Christman, council members, staff. Thank you for your efforts on behalf of the ocean and for coming to San Francisco today. My name's Burr Henneman with Commonweal's Ocean Policy Program. Just a few words about us. Commonweal first got involved with ocean issues in 1978 when we joined Richard Charter and not many other people in those days, in the earliest days of the OCS offshore oil and gas issue. Since 1998, our main focus has been to help state agencies implement various mandates and programs, such as the Marine Life Management Act, Marine Life Protection Act, and the exciting new conservancy program, the Coastal Ocean Currents Monitoring Program, which is the largest state-funded current monitoring program in the country. One of the ways we help state agencies implement these mandates and programs is by doing strategic funding of projects. A couple of examples. We have been funding a series of projects that Rick Starr of Sea Grant, some fishermen in the Monterey area, and UC scientists through the PSCO program supply their pilots on figuring out how fishermen who are out on the water more than anybody else can become an effective and cost-effective monitoring fleet and be useful in monitoring species that are economically important but that are hard to pick up through other monitoring methods because they're nocturnal or they hide when divers or remote operated vehicles are in the area, that sort of thing. In regard to the other types of monitoring, scuba and remote operated vehicles, such as the one that you'll be hearing more about later in the program, at Channel Islands, marine protected area monitoring is now done only by scuba and ROV. Last year, the Nature Conservancy and Commonweal helped fill a funding gap so that ROV surveys could be done at the Channel Islands MPAs last year. And we recently funded outfitting the Fish and Game research vessel Garibaldi with a crane and bow thruster so it can be used as a mothership for ROVs. And I hope you'll be funding that ROV, approving conservancy funding of that ROV so we can have one at each end of the state. The state can easily use two of them. And I hope you'll hear later from department folks, John Ugaritz, that the Garibaldi's out of the yard and back in the water this morning and ready to go to work on, as a support vessel for ROVs. My comments today are just about the Conservancy SAM's memo on interim funding, project selection, and application guidelines, which we strongly support. Think they did a very good job. Hope you will approve those today. We have one suggested addition coming from us wearing our hats as funders, albeit much smaller scale funders than you all have the possibility of being. But some of the issues and concerns are the same. The SAM's memo really is extremely broad, as it should be, in hanging things on the COPA mandates to you and using that as the basic set of criteria for consideration. We'd like you to see you add one other filter in there for projects. We have a lot of strong existing programs and legislative mandates. We'd like to see projects at least make the case of how they further one or more of those existing legislative mandates or programs, such as the MLMA or MLPA.
You're suggesting adding that to the selection criteria?
Yeah, just something very simple, but that projects would lay out how they envision these projects would benefit things like MLMA, MLPA, some of the basic water quality legislation, things like Channel Island monitoring and that sort of thing. And that's okay. That's our comments. Great. Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate that very much. Okay, thank you. Kurt Solomon, followed by Kate Wayne.
How you doing, Dave?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
Pretty good. Mine goes back. We gave you a handout a little bit earlier.
Pull the microphone just over to you a little bit, will you, Kurt?
We had a 3-page handout a little bit earlier.
The Donna passed out?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Mine goes back to, we have many fishermen and stuff looked at. We've been involved in the process since the beginning, sat on the Nearshore Advisory Panel and everything. And, we've been along with the process and everything and started to believe in it and everything. And this started back in September when we had a meeting with the Nature Conservatory. They told a few of our fishermen and us that asked us if we wanted to be bought out, and we went along with it and everything. And first of all, we possibly was going to happen by December. It didn't happen in December. And I called them, I think it was in January, and they said that there was an option where they could possibly go ahead and buy us out ahead of time, and then they'd get reimbursed on it and everything. Well, so that looked good and everything. And then by March was supposed to be the latest, and March came along. Well, by this time, we had pretty much used up our funds. All our fishermen, we sent them to the other buyers because we were going to be bought out, and they needed to have somebody to depend on to buy their fish and everything. Here we went. If you look at the last page on that handout, we went into bankruptcy, I think it was last month. And it was over And at that time, they dropped the whole issue of buying us out and everything at this point and everything. And I just like to say, you know, I always wanted to feel that I could believe in everything that was happening with the fisheries and stuff. And at this point, I don't. It, you know, I figured the process was right, you know. It didn't work out that way.
Again, as I said to Donna when she was here, I'm sorry that it happened. We are. We will take her memo and the answer that you both received from the national organization, see, and try to noodle down and see what really happened here, what commitments were actually made, and try to get a sense of kind of what the context of it is. Of course, we're in these conversations about buyout programs, so we understand why. But in terms of the specific nature of this one, we're not. So we will look into it and we'll get back to you on it. Okay?
Yes, I think it refers to Bill 1459 as the anti-trawl bill, and then there was a Bill 1319 which was supposed to have the funding to cover
right.
fishermen.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Kurt. Appreciate you coming. Kate Wing, followed by Jim Kurland.
Good afternoon, members of the council. My name is Kate Wing. I'm with the Nature Conservancy. I'm with NRDC. Thank you. Thank you, Mike, for reminding me who I work for. This is what happens when you're on planes too often. But I did remember to identify myself this time. I just want to speak briefly to the proposal before you, not so much the list of projects, but the project selection and application criteria. I agree with you, Mr. Bustamante. I think it would probably be good for everyone to have a little bit more time to review these documents ahead of meetings, and hopefully as this process starts running more regularly, we'll be able to get things up for not only your review but public review with a little bit more notice. But that being said, having had an opportunity to review the guidelines, our organization is supportive of them. I think they're very good. I think they're well written. And I would just highlight one particular aspect of the guidelines, which is on the second page where it talks about how it would not occur without council participation. One of the beautiful things about this council is that you have the ability to use a variety of non-bond funding sources, and that was part of what a lot of us who supported the legislation that created the council were looking to see. A lot of the other funding out there for ocean projects is bond only, and that constrains it very significantly in terms of what we really need in the ocean, which is often people or staff resources or things that are not actual physical pieces of capital. So I would highlight that one in particular, that I think you have the opportunity to be very creative to fund things and fund projects that no one else can, and I would encourage you to keep thinking that way as you move forward. Thank you.
Thanks. Jim Kurland, followed by Tom Graff.
And I'm not a teacher, but I have a handout that's pretty cool.
Pictures?
Yes.
Okay.
Lots of color.
Good.
Good afternoon. My name is Jim Kurland. I'm the Marine Program Associate with Defenders of Wildlife based in our Monterey Bay Marine Program Office. Thank you, Secretary Christman, and all the members of the council. And I'm going to talk about our funding recommendation by way of an introduction to the issue that we're recommending funding on. Defenders of Wildlife is a leading nonprofit conservation organization representing over 480,000 members and supporters across the nation, over 100,000 of which are here in California. When our members are polled on issues that are important to them, marine issues continually rank very high. This mirrors the public sentiment and certainly that of most Californians. Defenders is dedicated to the protection of all native wild animals and plants in their natural communities, focusing our programs on the accelerating rate of extinction of species and the associated loss of biological diversity and habitat alteration and destruction. Our programs encourage protection of entire ecosystems and interconnected habitats while protecting predators that serve as indicator species for ecosystem health. The sea otter is one such species that is a key indicator for ocean health. In recent years, a high mortality rate that has been documented in the California or southern sea otter. Researchers have shown that infectious diseases and parasites consistently account for 40 to 50% of southern sea otter deaths, and that's, by the way, the highest disease rate in any wildlife population known. The Monterey Bay area and Morro Bay are two particular hotspots for sea otter disease. Many of these diseases appear to be newly introduced and are related to human activities and pollution that originate on land. This is a wake-up call to pay critical attention to marine ecosystem health. The sea otter is the canary in the coal mine for our coastal waters. Defenders has recently completed development of a poster, which you now have, that will be used for educational outreach depicting the land-sea connection and how agricultural and urban runoff coupled with industrial and municipal discharge contribute to rising pollution levels in our coastal waters. And as the health of the California sea otter population in the nearshore marine environment it inhabits is a concern, this strongly correlates with the need for priority funding for improvements in water quality monitoring. Therefore, defenders request that the Ocean Protection Council prioritize funding for a comprehensive program that will strengthen existing water quality monitoring programs such as Mussel Watch and SWAMP, the surface ambient surface water ambient monitoring program, develop biological pathogen detection techniques for disease-causing pathogens that contaminate fresh and salt water, identify the pathways used by these pathogens to infect marine life, especially sea otters, and identify the land-based sources of these pathogens along the Central California coast. Unfortunately, existing monitoring programs do not test for disease-causing pathogens, and there is scant funding available to pay for these efforts. Until we better understand avenues for disease transmission and the root cause of the previous declines, the prognosis for recovery of southern sea otters is poor. In addition, some diseases that kill sea otters are a threat to human health. California's nearshore ecosystems and the long-term viability of businesses that rely on a clean ocean. In closing, Defenders welcomes the establishment of the California Ocean Protection Council as established through the requirements of the California Ocean Protection Act, and we look forward to working with the Council in the coming months and years. California has become a leader in ocean management and science. However, it is critical to ensure that this leadership on ocean protection and conservation continues. Among the highest priorities are funding and the adoption of long-term goals and objectives that maintains and expands that leadership, especially in the areas of coastal water quality and pollution, particularly as we've been describing for these diseases and biological pathogens causing problems for the sea otter, and then also ecosystem-based marine life and fisheries management and science. And lastly, for a future council meeting, we would like to suggest to the council that you invite Dr. Dave Jessup, who's the senior wildlife veterinarian with the Marine Wildlife Veterinary Care and Research Center with the California Department of Fish and Game, to give a presentation on the impacts of contaminants and disease in the California sea otter and how this is a prime example of the land-sea connection. We believe that this will be a very informative, disturbing, and eye-opening look at the trends of disease transmission from land to sea. Thank you for your opportunity.
Jim, thanks a lot. That's an excellent suggestion. We will definitely do that.
And for those in the audience, I have only one of these left, but if people are interested, I can provide
the highest bidder.
Got a few more. That's right.
That's right.
Tom Graff, followed by Warner Chabot. These two gentlemen are the last two speakers under item six. We will act on the recommendations, and just for information, before we move on to the pilot projects, we'll break for lunch for about an hour after this, and then come back and begin the discussion on these pilot projects. Tom?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Council. I'm Tom Graff, California Regional Director of Environmental Defense, and I'm here today actually on behalf of two of my Oceans Program colleagues, Rod Fujita and Joanna Thomas, who are still, they're probably wending their way back to the West Coast from a staff meeting which I attended, and I can beat out Kate Wing on miles, I believe, at least this week. First, I want to associate myself with the bipartisan remarks of the urgency of moving forward under this important new authority in California to protect our oceans, and particularly the oceans off the shore of California. And I'm just going to make a comment about being part of a national organization. I think sometimes we lose sight of how fortunate we are as Californians to have a bipartisan approach, or sometimes, as in the case of climate, as was mentioned last week, even a bipartisan competition to see what we can do to protect the state of California from threats to our natural resources and to our public health. So I'm here mainly to present an idea that I hope will be on one of your future agendas, hopefully the next one, and I think that fits in with the some of the guidelines that Sam Schuchat has proposed. And it's kind of a unique thing in that it proposes a fisheries revolving loan fund, which has the promise, if it works, to leverage a relatively small amount of state investment into benefits that are both economic and environmental, in the sense that if one invests in management reforms that are embraced by fishing industries, by sport fishers and others, that lead both to an improvement in the economic output of a particular fishery and in a better environmental performance, one can use scarce public money in two ways, really, both by improving the economy of the state directly and by perhaps attracting private capital along with the public money to accomplish these twin goals of economic improvement and environmental betterment. So the details of that are much better known to my colleagues Rod and Joanna. If you, I know they are well known to many, if not most of you, maybe all of you. Specific questions probably should go to them. But I hope this will be helpful to you as you plan for future meetings.
Excellent idea. We'll again take this under advisement. We'll schedule it for hearing it at one of our probably the next meeting, and look forward to some having a good public dialogue on this. Good idea.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Other questions or comments?
What, Tom?
Yes, Alan.
You're asking to approve $160K now, is that right?
No. Nothing for this meeting. This is just sort of setting it up for the next meeting.
Okay, that's the next meeting. Okay.
Yeah. We've got to take it under advisement, kind of get some staff recommendations back to us.
Okay. Thank you.
Comments or questions?
Chris? How is this a revolving fund? How would it work?
I was afraid someone would ask me.
Make it up. Come on, Tom.
That's right.
As I understand it, an industry, a small industry, a particular fishery in a particular place, would work together with the management authority of the council, and loans would be made to enable an improvement in the future of the fishery. It might include a restriction in catch in the short run, but a prospect of increased catch and maybe. You know, this
about
is
a
really
buyout? Might include a buyout program?
Partial buyout. Could include a partial buyout. I mean, I probably ought to defer to Brian, but
it would be a loan.
It would be a loan to specific private individuals.
That would then, at the conclusion, would then be brought back into the program.
The idea would be repaid with interest, right.
Okay.
That's why it's revolving, right.
We've had experiences, not in this arena, with revolving funds, and they seem to have much, much more demand than there is resources. And oftentimes, a fund is depleted rather quickly. I would suggest that as you're starting to develop the specifics of the program, you might want to find out if these loans can be put into some kind of a secondary market so that they can be purchased by other entities, so that the fund is replenished much quicker and more funds can then go out to more.
I think the idea here really is to demonstrate that this works, so that not only public capital but private capital will be brought to bear in this area. I mean, one of the key questions here, of course, is why do you need public capital at all? And I think it's the embracing by public agencies of the enterprise, along with the bringing of public values and protectionist values into the equation, that justifies the public involvement.
And I think that's what the Lieutenant Governor is suggesting. I mean, that would do just that by bringing private capital back, leverage private capital back into a
yeah, no, I'll bring that idea back.
There are people who would like to buy good loans.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so if you make a good loan, somebody buys that good loan, that money then doesn't have to wait till the conclusion
of that effort, that money then, because it's been bought out, comes back into the fund, which can be loaned out again.
Right. Absolutely. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Warner Chabot. Nice picture in the paper today, Warner.
Yeah, very good picture.
Great picture. That's a really good picture.
Yeah.
Is that you, Warner? Throwing themselves at my feet when they saw that picture.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, that's right.
You talked about the dark side of the moon. I had to be the dark side of the moon for the picture, you know? So, my name is Warner Chabot. I'm the Vice President of the Ocean Conservancy, and I'm speaking and urging the Council to support the adoption of the interim guidelines. I'd point out, you talked about the picture, in today's Chronicle, there were three stories dealing with the oceans. One was the story that you were giving a bad time about, having to do with a demonstration yesterday of ocean explorer Bob Ballard's Institute for Exploration in conjunction with the National Marine Sanctuary Program, whose goal it is to bring the oceans into the classrooms of every classroom in America. And that ROV that's located right off Cannery Row in Monterey, we tried to demonstrate how anybody could drive that ROV with the joystick and see the wonders of the ocean. And we think that that is an example of the type of creative thinking that we have here in California. The second was, interestingly, it was a story about recent discoveries made by the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute using ROVs to study ocean life. And with those studies, they're frankly discovering how the food chain works in the ocean. Amazingly, we still don't know that. We're discovering the fundamental basic science of how the ocean works. We're still beginning to understand some very fundamental things. The third was the article about legislation introduced both in the Senate by Barbara Boxer and in the House by a bipartisan House Ocean Caucus to try to implement the recommendations of the two ocean commissions. We believe that in California, our ocean is our largest public trust. This council is going to have jurisdiction and making decision over something that's not only 3,000 square miles, it's 3,000 cubic miles, if not more. In the last few decades, however, the technology advances, be it sonar, GPS systems, computers, have increased dramatically the harvest capacity of both our commercial and recreational fishermen many-fold. We can literally find and catch the last fish in the sea. There's nowhere for them to hide. As a result, around the world, about 80% of the largest fish in the ocean are gone. Since California's jurisdiction only extends out about 3 miles, most of that ocean is managed by federal fishery management councils. Under that management regime, off California, we've had overfishing of our rockfish fishery that's led to the collapse of that fishery, and we have many thousand square miles of ocean floor that are now closed to bottom fishing for what may be decades, maybe 50, 60 years, because of, depending on whose arguments you want to say, mismanagement, lack of information, but basically we haven't done a good job. Why? Partly because we failed to invest and develop and use the very technologies to map, monitor, and efficiently manage the living resources, which are a public trust and our national and state heritage. So we're losing that heritage and dealing with it, unfortunately, in the past on a crisis-by-crisis manner. Just think, we do have better maps of the dark side of the moon than we have the ocean floor right off the coast here. We have in the United States, no stock assessments, basic population numbers for over two-thirds of the fisheries that we commercially harvest. You just can't effectively manage, restore an ocean resource if you can't see it, you can't count it, and you can't measure it. California, however, and these points were made by two National Ocean Commission reports. California, however, was already ahead of both of those commission reports because by the time they were released, California had already passed and the governor had already signed landmark laws to manage our oceans on an ecosystem basis and to create a master plan for a statewide network of marine reserves. Responding to those two commission reports, one of its primary recommendations was to elevate ocean decision-making to a high level. California passed and the governor signed the bill that created this council upon which you sit. Right now, there is nothing like this council in any state, nothing that resembles your composition, nothing that resembles the potential that you have. So California truly is unique. We have more world-class marine research labs, the most advanced ocean laws of any state. What we need now is political leadership to provide the bold vision for a wild, healthy, restored, productive, bountiful ocean, and a commitment to invest carefully and efficiently, because we all know there's limited funds, in 21st century technology to understand and become world-class stewards of the sea. So I urge you to not only approve these interim guidelines and to support the projects that are before you today, but to try to be as bold and visionary as possible, because you truly are setting the model in California, but also for the nation. We have the amazing capacity of the technology here in the state, the marine research institutes, the celebrity that it can help draw attention to it, the political leadership. So you really can change the course of history, and we urge you to think as big as you can to change the course of history. Thank you.
Thanks, Warren. Well said. We really appreciate that. That concludes the speakers who have signed up to speak for item six. Taking it, bringing it back to the council members, we have been asked to, as a part of the staff recommendation, to approve the interim funding and project selection application guidelines under tab 5 in your binder. There was a suggestion by Bernd Henneman that we add to the selection criteria benefit to.
I think. Well, we might want
suggesting to MLMA or MLPA. We're talking about a broader statutory.
The range of existing
statutory
mandates. And programs.
Yeah, what I had written was projects that support existing statutory and administrative processes and requirements.
Not exclusively.
So
though.
Not exclusively. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And also that we're able to come back to the next meeting and make additional
absolutely suggestions. Absolutely. I mean, and that's an excellent point here. I mean, these guidelines have got to be a working set of guidelines. We need to adopt them to begin the process.
Before the term end.
Yeah, but at obviously through this process, we're going to learn some things we didn't know, and want to either subtract from or add to those guidelines as we learn from them. So. Any other comments or questions relative to these guidelines? Then I would entertain a motion then from the council to adopt these interim funding and project selection application guidelines.
Moved.
It's moved by by Secretary Lloyd. Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Thank you. Well done, Sam. Well done, all of you who came to testify on this item. We're going to now break for lunch. It's 12:30. We'll start promptly at 1:30 on item 7, the pilot projects. Thank you.